Because hockey hasn't completely taken over your life yet. Subscribe to podcasts of Hockey Central at Noon through iTunes or your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan, on demand. Leading the league in time on ice. This is Hockey Central at Noon on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Opening night of the best of three final at the 2016 World Cup of Hockey. Team Canada against Team Europe. We will get into that in just a little bit. We'll bring in Craig Simpson, lead analyst on Hockey Night in Canada, working the booth with Jim Hewson. We'll get Craig's opinion on what Team Europe can do to make this more difficult for Team Canada, or is it just going to be two, done, get on with the NHL preseason? Darren Millard here in the Hockey Central studio, along with Todd Telushko, 1994 Olympic silver medalist, and Doug McLean, a Hockey Central at Noon. It's interesting that the preseason really got into full swing last night, and it's kind of a sidebar as we work our way through this World Cup of Hockey, but a lot of action last night. The Rogers Place was broken in by the Oilers as they played their first game there, as the Oilers took a pair from the Flames and split squad, and the Toronto Maple Leafs and Ottawa Senators played a game in Halifax. Last year's preseason for Mitch Marner was very disappointing for a lot of people. He made sure that he was going to make a statement, Todd, in preseason game number one last night.
And he did. I mean, you watched the game last night, and I think it was on four different separate occasions. He decided, you know what, I'm going to go behind the net. I'm going to tell my defenseman to stay there, and I'm going to go corral the puck, and I'm going to go end-to-end Bobby Orr-like and create something.
A couple of assists in the game. Yeah, it was a 6-3 loss.
He looked really good, and the biggest thing was, can this guy play because he's so frail? He's not that big. He doesn't have the mature body size. But you can't hit what you can't catch. And last night, he looked fantastic. Showed his mitts that he has. His hands are fantastic. Great hockey sense. And I know it's not against all the regulars with the Ottawa Senators. But last night, he's playing against who he's got to play against. And he showed very, very well last night.
The hands are one thing from a stick handling perspective, but then you look at the passing besides, and you know, the saucer passes and the way he reads and sees the ice. And it's been said many times, is he Kane-like? Is he Kane-like? Well, when you watch last night, he looked very Kane-like last night. He's one-on-one, he's so dangerous, but I love the playmaking skills that he has. He does not want to go back to London. Dale Hunter, Mark would have been excited watching him last night. Dale, maybe not so much. Although the Knights are strong. They're going to be a contender again this year. I just don't see him going. I see him making this team.
And one of his wingers was Colin Greening, so I don't think that's who he'd be paired up with. Probably a little bit more skill.
Brooks Light as well.
Exactly. Yeah. And a couple times, Brooks Light, I know he was in front of the net, and there was like a pass from behind the net. It kind of hit him right in the tape. He's like, geez, what do I do with this? And he got rid of it. So, I mean, you put him with a little bit more skill, man, that guy's going to be dangerous.
Brooks, is Todd Telushko, by the way, Todd Telushko just insulted every line mate of Brooks Light.
I did. Oh, great players.
Brooks is the guy that shoveled that one three times before it went in there in the playoffs. You know what? With the way this guy passes, Brooks would not have to shovel at it three times. I think he put it on the first swat.
How was it important at all, do you think, Doug, for Mitch Marner to go out and have a really impressive, noticeable game after what happened a year ago?
Totally. I mean, you know what? General managers...
I ask that because there's others that say, it's training camp, they're going to work through it.
No. General managers and coaches and scouts and assistant GMs, and especially when it's so close to Mark Hunter. A kid learns, and you remember this, Todd, from when you played, your first training camp till your second training camp, usually a monumental difference in kids in their preparation. This kid totally prepared to go to camp this year. And the first thing you're doing on the fitness testing day is you're looking, where's Marner? What's the difference from last year? And this is the management team I'm talking about. You know, whether it's, you know, the assistants or the coaches or everybody, they're all focused on him. He's one of their top young prospects. You want to see him come in with a marked improvement. And it looks to me, I don't know his fitness testing, but he certainly looks it on the ice.
You know what it is, when you come into training camp, and I remember going through it myself, your very first training camp, you're walking on eggshells.
Even though you're a top five pick?
Yeah, it doesn't matter because, well, I wouldn't know that. No, okay. But at the end of the day, you walk into training camp and you're looking, you're glossy eyed because you're looking at all the veterans and these guys are so good. You've watched, you've grown up playing with them. And then you get on the ice with them. And the first thing you want to do is make sure you're giving them the puck and you're not playing your game. And then as time goes on, as you go back in the next training camp, you know the guys there, you become more comfortable, and then you become more confident. And the coaches know you. They know you by your first, well, everyone didn't know me by my first name. But they know you. They understand you. Now you're familiar with everybody again and your surroundings. And I'm telling you, it's a confidence thing. And when you have all the skill set that he does have, it's just being comfortable in your surroundings. And obviously he's getting there right now.
If they didn't know your first name, how the hell did they handle your last
name?
They
didn't. I remember seeing
his name, but I didn't have to pronounce it until I came in here, and I still don't know how to pronounce it. But anyway, here's what happens after the fitness testing. You go through your 8, 10, 12 fitness tests, and then the finished result goes to the general manager and the head coach, and it's 1 to 55 rated in every test. And when you get that list and you're going through it, you really, as a GM and as a coach, take notice as to last year's result to this year's result and where they rank in 1 to 55 or 1 to 50 or however many guys you have in training camp. And you hate like heck to see anybody that you think has a chance to make your team in that bottom 10. And typically, the best players are at the top or the real character guys.
But there are exceptions.
Oh, yeah. There are exceptions, but very
few. Tell the Mike Gartner story.
Very few. Oh, Mike Gartner was the best, eh? We'd be doing
Hockey Hall of Famer.
I'm not sure if it was dips or chin-ups. I think it was dips. And I was doing the counting on the dip bar, and Mike go through it, and then he stopped and said, was it 28 or 29 I did last year? And then he'd do one more. Jump off the bar, down. He was done. Brian Sutter was the same way. Brian Sutter was unbelievable how strong he was and how fit he was.
But I hosted a thing last week talking about technology and yeah. math. A bunch of school kids. And Brad Boyce, former Toronto Maple Leaf, was there. And we were talking about fitness testing, the difference between when he broke in to last year and how much it's changed. He said there was one year in St. Louis where they didn't do any testing. Zero. And he said, I had the best year of my career. But so put all this fitness testing aside.
You take, you look at the results, you study the results. But I'll never forget in St. Louis when the test results come in and Jacques Martin and I are there. And it came to Rick Walmsley and Greg Millen's results. You're right. There are exceptions to what I talked about.
the one thing about those fitness tests, and players will tell you, that there's no upside whatsoever when you're going to do it because you either got good – if you get a great score and you have a bad start to the season, you don't hear anything about the fitness. But if you have a terrible start to the season and your scores were bad, well, look at him. He's not in shape.
Oh,
and
no,
I'm like,
totally.
And so players hated that.
To Doug's point, if you come to camp rip best shape of your life and you put up this incredible result – Now you're set up to fail next year.
Yeah, I know. I remember
off topic with Mark
when I was in Detroit. When I was in Detroit, Fedorov and Yzerman, how the conditioning level of those two guys in their prime. Sergei was younger, obviously. Stevie was a machine on the testing. Sergei was a machine in the testing. So it's funny how guys, you think back and there was certain guys you had over your career that really jumped out at you as fitness, just terrific fitness guys and great players.
So you believe Mitch Marner stays with the Toronto Maple Leafs this
year?
Yes,
I do. I do.
He's going to start for sure. They're going to give him every opportunity. And I mean, whether he stays or he goes back, I mean, that's going to be up to him.
I've heard it numerous times, the scenario where he stays, Christmas, goes to the World Junior Championship, and then goes back to junior for the back half of the year.
And
the Memorial Cup.
And that wouldn't surprise me. I mean, that's an option you always look at as a GM. More specifically, the GM looks at it, and obviously with lots of conversation with the head coach.
He controls it, though.
Yeah, he does.
And if he goes out and does what he did last night.
Here's the big conversation that Lou and Mike will have. What is the value of him going back to junior? What from a development perspective, is he better to be here or is he better to be in London? That'll be a major conversation.
And you always hear that. What is better? For me, I don't understand why it's not better to play at the highest level of hockey. And Mitch Marner has the ability to learn at the National Hockey League level. This team, you know, it's they're not built to win the Stanley Cup tomorrow or next year, but why not let him grow with these guys right now?
But here's the problem with that. And I've gotten ripped over the years for this. Gilbert Brulé, okay? 6th overall pick, wasn't a controversial pick at the time, but since it has been for sure. Went back to junior his first year after training camp. The second year, stayed with the team. Within the first 2 months, fractured sternum, broken leg.
Yeah.
In his second year.
Which is
where Marner is. Yeah, yeah. And you know what? I don't know, did it have any bearing on it, on his career? I don't think so. Concussions really ended his career. But if it happens, you live with it for a long time.
If he goes back to London for the back half of this season after the World Junior Championship,
I wouldn't have a problem with that.
I wouldn't. And he's in an environment where he gets a chance at another OHL title and a Memorial Cup. That might be the perfect scenario.
That's a win-win.
You know, the only thing that I think could be a detriment is I watched him last night playing, and he was fully invested in that game. And I'd be worried if he went back to London that it would be too easy for him. Yeah. And not that he's going to regress, but he doesn't move forward. Last night, he was working his tail off. Like, he's like, you are not cutting me from here. And if he can bring that type of work ethic every single night in the National Hockey League, I'm telling you, it's going to be hard for them to send him down.
Not many guys don't work hard for Dale Hunter.
That's just going to go there.
Valid point.
If I'm Mark, I trust Dale to keep him in line.
And that's an interesting dynamic, isn't it? Dale, the assistant GM who will be heavily involved, or Mark, the assistant GM who will be heavily involved. And obviously, you're always concerned where the guy's going back to, who's the coach, what's the program like, la-di-la-di-la. So it's a pretty good scenario. To me, it's a win-win. I'd love to see him. He's going to play the 9 for sure. Burning the contract year, does that phase him? Well, he's going to be a star. And you're getting to that entry level, and you're getting to that unrestricted a year earlier, you know.
And that means Matthews and Marner would come up at the same time.
Yeah, you're not. It's not affecting you totally, but it's the 9 games, and then the 41 games.
Yeah, sure.
There's two scenarios there.
Oh, did you guys catch any of the highlights from Edmonton?
No.
Rogers Place.
No.
Wow.
Yeah, it's off the charts, that place. Yeah.
So there's the new rink. There's the on ice product. Edmonton went out and put on a nice show. Milan Lucic, which is his first game. But there's a couple of different just things that you never, ever hear about from a National Hockey League preseason game. And one was from Todd McClellan. He said, we had a chance to appreciate the new rink in warm-up, but then we went out and tried to play the game as best we could. But then he added, Todd, this is a quote from Todd McClellan, we had a chance to admire the crowd, but we're still finding our way around the building. Between periods, we're not sure how far it is to get anywhere, especially for me as an individual, just getting here. Todd McClellan talking about just the getting used to his new surroundings.
It's just nice not to have to walk through the crowd to get to your dressing room.
Through the bar?
Through the bar. Especially when you're in 28th place.
I walked over to the game the other day with Bob Nicholson. I had a chat with him, and I was saying, you know, what do you think? Like, what does this arena mean to the city? He goes, Todd, you have no idea. This rink makes every rink, like 5 years old maybe, seem obsolete already. It's that unbelievable. And that's going to be the new, what's the word I'm looking for? The
benchmark.
The benchmark of new rinks coming up. It's crazy.
Yeah, I obviously haven't been in it, but it certainly looks spectacular. And, you know, you love the Northlands. You love the history. You love going there. I remember being on the ice there in practice, and it was the ice was amazing, and it just the whole Gretzky thing. But this for a city like Edmonton, this is to have the best rink in the NHL. How cool is that?
And what it's doing for downtown
and,
as well.
And you're a big junior guy, Western Hockey League. One of my good buddies, Ryan Marsh, is an assistant coach for the Edmonton Oil Kings, and they had 17,000 people at their game. Mm-hmm. And he says their facility that they built for the Oil Kings as well, it rivals any NHL dressing room as well. So those guys in Edmonton playing junior hockey there are jacked as well.
And they're playing in the big building as well.
Yes. Yeah.
Wow.
This is a nice bonus for the Edmonton Oilers. It's great. But How much rope do you think is there?
Not a lot.
With the on-ice team?
Not a lot.
The building will be a distraction, a nice little sideshow for the first. They had 18-5 for an exhibition game last night. Ridiculous. I mean, that's good on you. Everybody wants to see the new rink.
There has to be vast improvement this year with this hockey team. And, you know, Bob Nicholson, Pete Chiarelli, they, obviously, McClellan, they've got to show some major gains. They were active this summer. There's still some holes. They feel good about their team. They should be unbelievably excited about McDavid. I'd be excited about the guy that's playing tonight, too. Draisaitl. I mean, there's a real group there. So it's going to be interesting. They've made the big move, moving Hall out of there. You know, one
Larson
of their
last night.
Impact guys.
Here's Craig Simpson. So I hear the coaches' rooms are pretty good at the new rink in Rexall Place. Any Spidey senses tingling that you want to come back out of retirement and coach again?
No, he wants to come back because of McDavid, not the building. He thinks his power play would be a lot better now.
Yeah, you could definitely enjoy some time with the creativity of that young man for sure. But no, I heard you earlier, Darren, and the excitement of a new building is going to be one that will take them through the first month and first few games. But I agree with Doug. This is a year where, you know, I think every year everyone's going, well, they're going to be better. And this is going to be the year there's going to be progress. But I think for both Todd, who was, in my opinion, even shocked to a point where he couldn't believe they were as bad as they were last year. And for Pete Chiarelli, it's more his fingerprints are on, you know, this team a little bit more. And so with that comes the swing of development and pressure. And I think it'll be a good thing for them. And I hope that they can at least maybe transform that early excitement at home and get off to a good start and put some wins in the bank.
You know, the one thing that jumps out for McDavid, for me, he's not going to put up with. He's a kid, okay? He's in his second year in the NHL. But just his demeanor, he is not going to put up with a poor team. I really believe that.
That's a good point.
Yep.
I think he's ready to, you know, take a leadership role. I thought it was the right thing to do with, you know, with Peter and Todd at the helm of the North American team. What a great dress rehearsal for, you know, Connor being the captain, Connor having the, not the weight of the world, but the focus of the hockey world on him in Toronto here at the World Cup. And I thought he handled himself extremely well. And obviously, I agree, Doug, on the ice, he's that kind of a driver that will allow you to, you know, bring everybody up. I think every good team needs that role model of, you know, wow, work ethic-wise, what are you doing in the gym? What are you doing on the ice? I better follow. I better come along. And just to set the tone of, you know, what's acceptable and what's not acceptable. And I think he's shown in his little time from a hockey standpoint that on the ice, you know, he can drive that acceptability to a higher level. So you better all grab on and go. And I think that'll be a big factor this year. And I think that is.
Craig Simpson's with us. Are you still there? You sound like your phone may have dropped out a little bit. Okay, we'll reconnect with Craig Simpson and get his opinion on what's going to happen tonight at the World Cup of Hockey Championship Final, Game 1 of the best of three.
To add on to Doug's point, talking about Connor McDavid not accepting anything, the other guy, and we talked about it here, is Leon Draisaitl. I think he's built of the same mold that Connor McDavid is. So you got.
But what are the expectations for Leon Draisaitl?
I think a solid support guy right behind Connor McDavid. I think they expect, seeing him play in this tournament, I think he's elevated his game as well. And I think that they're expecting huge things from him. I think this is going to be a massive breakout.
What are huge things? 25?
Well, minimum. I think 25 is definitely attainable for him, yeah.
Craig's back here.
Okay.
Craig, I want to slide over to the World Cup of Hockey, but before we get there, this I want to give some people a background. We had a hockey seminar yesterday at Sportsnet. Everybody got together.
Summit.
Okay. The guys that are on the road, the guys that are in the studio, everybody was together. And I'm going to be honest with you, Craig. I had no idea that you were as big of a chirper as you were.
He gets it from Scott Oak.
You were roasting Scott Oak during that gathering yesterday.
Well, you know, if Doug will attest to, if you're going to be a good team, you got to be able to have some fun together. You got to have thick skin, and you got to be able to laugh. And nobody's got thicker skin or a bigger laugh than Scotty Oak.
Yeah, I turned around. I'm like, who's doing all the beacon back there? And they said Craig Simpson.
Yeah, and something really bothered me after we went to our little soiree, you call it, or whatever. Yeah.
Gathering.
Yeah, and Deb Berman sat next to me. And she said that she was nervous all day. You were there as well on the other side of her. She was nervous because it was like sitting next to the bad boys in high school
who would get you in trouble all the time. I was with RJ. You were the one that was like had an opinion on everything. So Craig, Team Canada,
yep.
Is there a scenario that they can lose in this best of three?
I don't think so, and I think what you just said, the best of three is why. I think there's no question that, you know, you could have a shocker or an upset, you know, one game, one off. We saw it a little bit in the Russia game. You know, Bobrovsky for a short period of time might have been that goaltender who could come up with a huge upset, but Canada, you know, dug in and got it going. So I would say no, Darren. I think Europe will give them a good game. Europe will be not an easy opponent to beat, but I don't see any scenario where they could beat them two out of three times.
Greg, what are the chances that Ralph Kruger, part of his pregame talk, is going to include a quick video clip of Team Switzerland defeating Canada in the preliminary round in the Turin Olympics, in which he was the architect with a 2-0 victory?
Yeah, you know, there's all kinds of little motivational swings. I think it's interesting talking to so many different people, different countries, different players. You know, the history is just that. It's history. I even Scott Oak was, you know, saying about how Belarus beating Sweden and comparing Team Europe. Well, I mean, Team Europe has 12,000-plus NHL games, 6,300 points, 8 Stanley Cups. You know, Belarus didn't have any of that. Mm, so
right.
it's a big difference. I just think Ralph's done a good job of bringing these guys the opportunity when you're typically playing for, you know, Andrzej Kopitar in Slovenia. You got no chance to beat Canada. Even guys in Germany, Switzerland, the rarity of best on best beating them. And there's their opportunity to come together as a group. And I think that's been a real solidifying, gelling thing within that locker room.
I'm still ticked off at Sweden and the USA. That you know, I mean, I'm glad for Europe. I'm glad they're playing tonight. But, like, I listened to you and Yui there last week in one of the Sweden games, and it was sickening. Like, they didn't want to even try to score. I remember you guys talking about a power play. They were winning 1-0, and they wouldn't shoot the puck. They wouldn't even try to score on a power play. Like, it bothers me that these two teams aren't playing tonight. And I would have, I know it's exciting. I know it's going to be great for the fans. And
yeah,
but I'm shaking my head at those other two teams. Honest to God.
I agree. And I'm disappointed as well. I think we've seen more with the Russians with their, you know, reluctance to change lines, to play a little different style of game. And I think that's been a real issue there,
but you expect it with them, Craig.
Yeah, that's what I mean. So we've talked about that, Gray. I think when you've got Nick Lidstrom and Daniel Alfredsson and Matt Sundin up in the box, and you would think that their influence would be more on that team. I agree with you, Doug. I thought that the strategic play of, you know, being cautious and just trying to win a 1-0 game or a 2-1 game, and the fact that they came into that semifinal having scored only 7 goals in 3 games. I mean, to me, you've got the horses, you've got some good skill and talent. I didn't like the passiveness to their game, and I think ultimately it ended up costing them.
Craig, how do you think the emotional investment has been for this tournament from Canadians and hockey fans? I mean, you've got the Olympics, you've got the World Cup, you got past Canada Cups.
Yeah.
What do you think the feeling is with this one, especially now that it's Team Europe against Team Canada?
Yeah, I think it probably hasn't been to the level that they would have hoped. I don't think there's any question it doesn't rival an Olympics. I mean, being start to finish in Sochi, the level of play was high. And from a patriotic standpoint, I think everybody was really excited, as they were clearly on home ice in Vancouver. So I think the elements have been good. When Canada's been playing, and if, you know, Canada could go up against North America, I think there'd be a real sense of excitement there. But overall, I think it's been a success. And overall, I don't mind at all the North America team and the Europe team. I think you look at alternatives, you'd have two weaker countries. Are you going to bring Germany in here or France or Slovakia? You know, I think it was a... It was a really good compromise that added a pretty good flair.
But Mike Babcock saying he doesn't like these hybrid teams. He wants countries in, I'm like, Mike, if it's more competitive, then let's put it on.
He should volunteer to coach one of those countries next time.
In 2 weeks, so we can get the season going. And
tell him to take Austria. Coach them next tournament. See how much he likes having those in.
You're not coaching Canada this time. You're coaching Switzerland.
I bet you he'd change and say, well, we want Team Europe.
Yeah, let's throw the coaches assign them teams.
My biggest excitement about this tournament is I haven't had to pay that much attention to training camps yet. That's what I'm really excited about. And after Wednesday or Thursday, then we'll get into the training camps and get excited about Marner and the split squads and things like that. I'm really excited.
I jokingly said the players that got eliminated were more disappointed that they have not being in the final.
Man, you don't remember, Craig, when you played, the big thing in training camp, I remember sitting as a management team, well, this veteran, he doesn't want to go to St. Louis. He'd rather stay home with the family. You're always trying to appease your veteran players for the – putting the damn exhibition games lineups together was torture because you'd always have six pissed-off veterans.
Yeah, no question.
The best part about the World Cup is the guys missed out on the VO2 and all that stuff, so they didn't have to do that at the fitness testing. Have a great call tonight. It was good catching up with you yesterday at the summit. And, you taught me something about Craig Simpson that I didn't know.
Hey. And Craig Simpson's young fellow, by the way, is in Edmonton Oilers training camp and playing well. So let's hope that he has a great camp.
Yeah, Dylan's having a good start, so hopefully he can get into some games and see what happens.
So you have to follow training camp.
Absolutely, yeah. I'm hoping for two games, big wins by Canada, so I can get back.
Attaboy. thanks, Craig.
Good luck.
All right, guys, take care.
Be good. There's Craig Simpson. He'll have the call, the lead analyst on Hockey Night in Canada, with Jim Houston in the booth and Scott Oak, as well as Ron McLean and Nick Kyprios, Ellie Friedman, and Kelly Rudy with the panel at Air Canada Centre tonight, game one of the 2016 World Cup of Hockey final.
It was a thrill last night at our summit thing after the beer fest, or whatever you call it, and getting to spend some time with Bob Cole. And when Bob's
Order of Canada recipient.
You don't see him all winter. And, you know, he was there, Grapes was there at the summit. But it was great to just spend some time and talk to Bob. And, again, congratulations on that great honor. And it was kind of fun to see him and get a picture taken with him.
Todd.
Yes.
There's like, you know, thought bubbles in the cartoons? Yeah. You're familiar with the cartoons?
Of course I am. My Archie comics, yeah.
That's what McLean would... Doug McLean was like yesterday, like every single, and he was just far enough away from the stage that the management couldn't hear him. But everybody within 15 feet could hear him with a comment on every single thing that was said. He had a shot going
and
back.
And most of them very positive.
Well, they'd be
not
disappointed.
A chance.
They'd have been disappointed.
Especially at 10 to 5. Especially the guy that got up at 10 to 5 to speak. It was really positive.
Oh, update. Update on the chances of NHL participation in the Olympic Games.
Yes.
We'll have that for you next. Are you thinking it's positive, or is it going to be another shot at the possibility of the NHL taking part in the Olympic Games? We'll have that for you next as we continue on the NHL Network, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, and on Sportsnet.
Save your money. Cancel your subscription to Teen Beat Magazine. Get a free subscription to the Andrew Walker Show podcast instead. Available in iTunes or with your podcatcher of choice. Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Now more Hockey Central at noon on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
It is game one of the 2016 World Cup of Hockey final. History being made tonight as Team Europe, with those eight different nations represented against Team Canada, who has won 14 games in a row in best-on-best going back to 2010. A six-year winning streak.
Yeah, not bad, huh?
Yeah. So that makes Canada a slight favorite going into game one. Darren Millard here in the Hockey Central studio with Todd Halushko and Doug McLean. Update on potential NHL Olympic participation in 2018. Again, this is sneaking up really fast.
Yeah.
The International Ice Hockey Federation president, Renee Fassell, told the Associated Press this week that he believes the odds are 50-50 at best that hockey players, the best hockey players in the world will be in South Korea. But he does say that he feels better about the chances of having NHL players compete in 2018 than he did earlier this year, adding, Fassell intends to, and I quote, beg for $10 million to cover travel and insurance expenses for NHL players to be at the Olympics.
And then he better beg some owners, the guys that don't want to shut the season down for 3 weeks. By the way, can I make a public...
If they get the money.
Yeah.
If they get the money, they're going.
Oh, yeah.
For like sure. Owners.
The players want to go. They're going to be there. Mm-hmm. They're going to be there for sure.
Yeah, I know this is a near and dear to your heart.
Well, I participated in the last Olympics that didn't have like all the best on best.
Don't say that.
Well, we were still pretty good, but but there was, and if you really look at the guys that came there, they were future best on best. Paul Kariz and all those guys, Brian Savage, Junior Coyne. But I want to see it. I why wouldn't you want to see best on best? And if they can go there, hey.
I never put that into context that you were the last.
Yeah. 94.
Last group that before the NHL
participation.
The mix
and matching of guys.
Was Chris Felix still on that team?
No, Chris Felix. He was still in Baltimore.
Dave King was the coach?
No, Dave King was not. Tom Rennie was the coach.
Oh, yeah. That's right. Corey Hirsch
was our goalie. So we had Adrian Acoin, Chris Therrien, Brian Savage, Todd Warren. We had good players.
Good team.
They just weren't there yet. And we played against the likes of Peter Forsberg, Yuri Lightning. All the guys were good.
When they opened it up to NHL participation, how did you feel about it then?
Right when they did it? Well, I was already done, so it wasn't
got a great opportunity.
Sure. No, and that's what it does, right? It gives guys an opportunity, gives them a platform to maybe springboard their career. And for me, it's kind of funny, Doug, you can maybe attest this as a GM. I go into the Olympics without having any offers from anybody. I'm the exact same player 2 weeks after the Olympics. I happen to score 5 goals in that tournament, and I got 7 offers from NHL teams because one GM's like, well, then maybe we'll give him a chance. And then somebody else says, well, if he likes him, we better do him. So it was kind of like a domino effect. So, yeah, it's a great opportunity for guys to get that opportunity at a bigger platform.
And you're looking at guys tonight fighting for contracts, you know, Seidenberg,
yeah.
You know, I mean, it's an important tournament for them when you're on the stage, you know. And it's the same thing, Todd. I remember going to the World Championships, and you're always at the World Championships saying, can you find the one guy that maybe can come
slip
in?
Through the cracks.
Slip through the cracks. By the way, I got I tried to re-up my Uber.
This is good.
Because it was shut down because there's no Uber in PEI, right? I hit the wrong button, and now I've applied for an Uber license to be a driver. So I've got a message today. Send my documents in so I can be an Uber driver. I don't have a car. I can't be an Uber driver.
Is there no Uber on PEI?
No.
Really?
No. There's courtesy taxi and you know what?
There's a void. There's an opening there. You take advantage of this thing.
Like, seriously, I don't have a car. I can't do it here. So stop sending me these damn tweets.
Uber on PEI. Doug McLean pulls up. Where you want to go?
In the 2003 escape.
The matchup tonight, there's different levels to it, but Marion Gaborik, it's just, you knew it was going to be tough for Team Europe anyway. But now Marion Gaborik is out. And it's just like just one final blow.
And you knew he wasn't going to stay healthy with the tough luck that Marion has had the last number of years. I mean, really, this guy, from hip problems in Minnesota to problems in L. I mean, you just knew it was going to catch up to him. And big, big loss for them because he was playing so well.
It really is. And how many other GMs are watching this finals right now and saying, please, let's get through this. Let's have a no-hitter.
No-hitter.
Yeah, that's exactly what they're hoping for.
You saw Blue Jays last night with their brawl. That way people can get hurt.
One guy.
Fluky.
Seriously, you're right.
Okay. Give me a reason why Canada is pushed. Maybe it's from the Canadian side.
My reason why I think they're going to be pushed is it's the off ice stuff, the preparation of Ralph Kruger. He's been there. He knows exactly what Mike Babcock's and their staff are going to do. I mean, okay, you have to have the skill set and the guys to compete with them. I think they do with Team Europe. So if he can implement a game plan that's going to give them an opportunity to stay with these guys, I think it comes from behind the bench. I think it's Ralph Kruger. I think that's the reason why they have a chance tonight.
Oh, I guess the only chance I see that they have is if Halak has the game. I mean, we've watched Halak at playoff time have some amazing games, but he was younger and he was in, you know, he's still a young, relatively young goaltender. He's got to stand on his head and it still won't be enough. It still won't be enough. I remember coaching against Colorado in the Stanley Cup Finals, and you couldn't match up against them when Forsberg's coming and Sakic's coming. And this, you cannot match up against this Canadian team. And Kruger said it, four number one lines and a defense, and then not to mention Price.
The biggest thing is the number one line for Team Europe, which is going to be Tatar, Kopitar, and Hossa. They have to be equal to four number one lines tonight in order for them to win. But they have to be unbelievable.
I love the second line. For Team
Europe. Who's gonna fill in for Gabber? Is gonna be Bodker's gonna jump in there, or are they maybe gonna throw up a Thomas Vanek to play with Nielsen and Zuccarello?
I do Bodker.
Yeah. He's got the speed, but
Nielsen and Zuccarello.
Oh, they've been good.
It's a good line.
If they play those the heck out of those two lines, just, maybe.
And you look at their center ice and you say, okay, just a minute. You got Dreisaitl, you got Franz Nielsen, you've got Kopitar. You got a pretty good center ice there. That would be considered a very good center ice until you look at who you're playing. And then you look at seven centermen.
The extras for Team Canada, Claude Giroux and Jake Muzzin, will not go tonight.
And a great point from producer Matt Brown all the time. Claude Giroux, the highest point producer in the National Hockey League the last 5 years, and he can't get into the lineup tonight. How scary is that for depth for Team Canada?
So... look, they could win a game, and Ralph's done a great job, and the staff, Paul Maurice, they've all done a great job.
But this isn't going to be anything close to what you saw from Team North America and Sweden and that type of high-octane offense.
No.
Team Europe has to play incredibly disciplined and conservative.
They will do everything in their power to clog up the neutral zone, and they will assume, you watch when their defense get the puck tonight. It will be Pittsburgh-style
flip
breakouts. It'll be flippers. It'll be off the wall. It'll be off the glass. It'll be the game plan is very simple. When you get the puck on the stick below the goal line, it's outside the blue line.
They may set a record for most pucks hitting a scoreboard.
I'm telling you.
The people at Air Canada Center are probably worried tonight that beautiful screen up there, screens going to take a few hits from pucks.
Because when I was walking here today, it's funny. I was thinking,
because you don't have a car.
What would Kruger be telling them? What would his game plan? So, the neutral zone will be, and Europeans are excellent at neutral zone defense. They do a very good job of that. Their defense is not good enough, in my opinion, to even match up. So they got to be flippers.
I think that the back end. Flippers. I mean, it's. The back end is experienced. You got Char and Seidenberg in Boston. They were very big parts of the Stanley Cup win. Yeah. And I know they're a little bit slow afoot, but you've got a guy like Roman Josi that can step up. And, you know, the big advantage or the big chance that Europe has is if Canada gets into penalty problems. That to me, that's their only real chance of winning this game. But it's a possibility they get some calls their way and they score with the talent they have on that roster.
Is there any danger that Team Canada enters too confident?
I don't think Babcock will allow them to be, and the coaching staff. I think, and again, I don't think this group doesn't remind me that they would even be like that. They're such competitive character guys. We've seen what Sydney's done in the leadership group. It's just on and on. And again, I talk about a guy that I'm excited to watch again tonight is Tavares. I've been so impressed with that kid from the Stanley, the playoffs, the down the stretch. He's such a pro, you know, to watch how he competes.
Can they get Stamkos a goal?
Please get him one. Please.
Yeah, it's bad news for Team Europe, I think, because Stamkos has not busted out yet, but he's had a lot of chances. He hasn't scored. And it's scary to think they're doing that. Canada's doing what they're doing without production from Stamkos.
He's not getting enough ice time. And that's playing the wing.
And that is the problem, right? You throw him on a different line, exactly. Because they're just rolling lines, right?
Cooper in the building bothers Stamkos. I'm kidding.
Is Crosby Canada's MVP?
Yes.
Yeah.
He is.
Kane, who's next?
Marchand.
Yeah?
Yep, I believe so. He's been really, I mean, this guy's, he's done everything so, he's done, played
Taves,
so well. And
Taves
I know,
has been great.
Taves has been good, but yeah. You know, Marchand has just been that little water bug that's kind of just enough of an irritant for everybody else to get them off their game. But then his production has been fantastic, and he's fit in perfectly and seamlessly with Bergeron and Crosby.
And don't ever kid yourself. Team USA were bothered by him. Mm-hmm. From the first exhibition game to the second exhibition game to the game. And he was a force. And I remember talking about him. I mean, he was so good last year in the regular season. He was so good. And he's carried it. And he's become – I remember watching this kid play midget hockey in Moncton. And he has become so good. In the Monctonian tournament, he was there from – he's a Dartmouth, they're a Halifax kid.
Do you see a point where he sheds that in-your-face agitator image?
I think if he does that,
because he scores,
he's taking
so
away
much
from his game, though. That's in his DNA. That's always going to be there. Once you're like that, I don't think it goes away until maybe you get into your 40s and you don't want to be part of that anymore. But I don't think that he's as effective a player if that's not in his game.
But you know what?
John Shan is poking his head around.
I think he's gained a lot of respect from players in the league and coaches.
When do you think that happened?
I think it's been emerging over the last year and a half.
Agreed.
That all of a sudden, Marchand, he's now a star. And he's become that valuable player. And I think there's more respect for him than there's been in a long time. I mean, we remember, was it Brian Burke talking about the rats and this and that? Now, when you hear his name, it's, hey, this guy's pretty darn good.
Leading goal scorer on Team Canada in the NHL last year.
And I think, Doug, I think that just comes with years of experience of playing the National Hockey. Yeah, you're a pain in the butt. But as you become more of a veteran in the league and you produce, then there's young guys coming into the league. It's just natural that you're going to get more respect. That's the way it is.
Team Canada against Team Europe tonight. The World Cup of Hockey final starts this evening. It's game number one of this best of three final. Canada out for a 15th consecutive win in best-on-best going back to the 2010 Olympic Games. Their last loss was in the preliminary round against Team USA in Vancouver, and they've ran the table since.
Well, what do you say about Bergeron? I mean, you talk about who's the most valuable player. How valuable is this guy to the Boston Bruins, to Team Canada? I mean, on and on and on. He's got a personality. You see him doing the commercials. You love, you know, the thank you to the fans. But how valuable is this guy?
Well, he's the most low-maintenance person. Everybody I talk about, a coach's dream. Oh. If you've got a guy that you want to build around and your team's going through problems, you stick Bergeron in there, let him take care of everything because he's just that type of player. He's so low-maintenance.
I'm just on the Marchand part. Skating with Sidney this summer. I wonder what that's done for his maturity level, too.
And Nathan MacKinnon. Yeah. Being around this guy? Mm-hmm. Colby Armstrong should have hung around with him in the summers. He'd still be playing probably, eh?
Colby gets hurt.
He just
doing a one-hour radio show.
Oh, God.
But I remember, you know what, it's funny, and it's a quick story. I remember when Bergeron signed, and I phoned Pietrelli, and he gave him $5 million. And I was negotiating a contract for somebody. I said, Peter, this is a comparable. And he said, Doug, you have no idea how good this guy is for us. And he was, you know, and because I was trying to get, how is this guy a comparable? And because I, you know, he was a young kid and then coming out of his entry level. But he was that good then.
So you phoned somebody and complained to them?
No, I just asked. I asked him.
That's so...
collusion?
Yeah, I just asked. You know,
I can just see you pulling up in the car and Uber and just complaining nonstop about the person in your car.
Remember Nick tweeted that Uber picture of me last year when I picked him up at the hotel?
Thanks to Craig Simpson for stopping by today. Look forward to his call with Jim Houston, Ron McLean, Kelly Rudy, Ellie Friedman, and Nick Kiprios on the panel tonight.
Should I go down to that park tonight and watch the game down there? Is that a fun experience?
Fan Village.
Yeah.
I think it's, awesome. I think it's over.
So
it's
I...
Maple Leaf Square is a fan viewing session.
Shoot.
Enjoy the game tonight.